Fast Asleep with Gina Marie. Ah, you have again found the place for amazing classic short stories. Welcome to you if this is your first visit with us, and welcome again, wonderful long-time listeners. Now, I'm still Gina, I think, and Marie, well, Marie will never stop being Marie. And, you know, I guess I embarrassed Bob, our engineer, just a little bit when I mentioned him last week. Anyway, at least he's still speaking to me. But Marie and Bob wanted me to let you know that they are very, very pleased with your kind comments. And we all very much appreciate them. Thank you for those. Thank you for your likes. And thank you for those growing subscriptions. So now, let's get to today. Oh, I love this week's story so much. Well, I love its author, novelist and playwright of, well, romantic thrillers, Daphne du Maurier. Yes, oh gosh, her name alone fills me with anticipation. She has a style like no one else, and it's all about atmosphere. You know, she was very, very young when she wrote today's story, and she has absolutely no problem gently capturing our attention and then just, well, carrying us off to her very mystical setting. Every word is magic. But first, let's think about this. What about Daphne du Maurier have we not already covered here on Fast Asleep? I mean, if you haven't done it already, you can scroll back for other du Maurier stories. Oh, there they are, all right. Oh, but first, you've got to hear this one from today. Well, we know she was born in 1907 in London, England, and she was one of three girls born to an actor and an actress. She married a major in the British Army who later became a lieutenant general. Ooh, Frederick Boy Browning. Okay. And let me see my card here. Oh, yes, they had three children. And it wasn't a perfect marriage. But come on, what is? It was said she could be, quote, chilly and aloof, unquote, to her husband and her children. Huh, haven't we all? I mean, at one point, Browning was knighted in 1946, making Daphne Lady Browning. And then her husband died in 1965, and 4 years later, Ms. du Maurier was made a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire. Do you know, she never told anyone about this honor, and she never even used the title. Her children didn't know until they had to read it in the newspaper. Well, I guess I can't get through anything about du Maurier without those alleged relationships, so here we go. Several writers have speculated a bit about this loving wife and mother who spoke about her male energy. She believed it was this energy that was the power behind her writing. Okay, I don't necessarily think you have to be male to bring energy to something, but anyway. Ms. du Maurier denied any bisexuality, and it was alleged that she had long-term relationships, one with actress Gertrude Lawrence and another with her publisher's wife, Ellen Doubleday. Okay, I did it. Can we move on? Well, there's not there's a lot more to tell, but let's get to it. Ms. du Maurier died in what I consider to be the perfect way, in her sleep. It was in 1989, and she was 81. Yes, she was the author of Rebecca, My Cousin Rachel, Oh, and please let's not forget the birds, along with many other works. So, well, let's just enjoy this one, shall we? Written sometime between 1929 and 1937. Tuck in, everybody, for Daphne du Maurier's East Wind. Nearly 100 miles west of the Scillies, far from the main track of ships, lies the small rocky island of St. Hilda's. Only a few miles square, it is a barren, rugged place with great jagged cliffs that run steep into deep water. The harbor is hardly more than a creek, and the entrance like a black hole cut out of the rock. The island rises out of the sea, a queer, misshapen crag, splendid in its desolation, with a gray face lifted to the four winds. It might have been thrown up from the depths of the Atlantic in a moment of great unrest, and set there a small, defiant piece of land to withstand forever the anger of the sea. Over a century ago, few knew of its existence. And the many sailors who saw its black outline on the horizon imagined it to be, well, little more than a solitary rock standing like a sentinel in mid-ocean. The population of St. Hilda's has never exceeded 70, and the people are descendants of the original settlers from the Scillies and Western Ireland. Their only means of livelihood used to be the catching of fish and the cultivation of the soil. Today, things are greatly changed, owing to the monthly call of a coastal steamer and the installation of wireless. But in the middle half of the last century, years would sometimes pass without communication with the mainland. And the people had degenerated into quiet, listless folk, the inevitable result of intermarriage. There were no books then, no papers, and even the small chapel that had been built by the original settlers had fallen into disuse. Oh, year in, year out, the life remained unchanged, with never a new face or a fresh thought to break the monotony of the days. Sometimes, on the horizon, the faint glimmer of a sail would be seen, and the people would gaze with wonder in their eyes. But slowly the sail would become a far-off speck, and the unknown ship pass into oblivion. They were peaceable folk, these natives of St. Hilda's, born to a quiet, untroubled existence, as monotonous as the waves that broke against their shores. They knew nothing of the world beyond the island. They saw no more momentous happenings than birth and death and the changes of the seasons. Their lives were untouched by great emotions, by great sorrows. Their desires had never been lit, but lay imprisoned within their souls. They lived blindly, happily, like children, content to grope in the dark and never to search for the something that lay beyond their darkness. Some inner sense warned them that in their ignorance dwelt security, a happiness that was never wild, never triumphant, but peaceful and silent. They walked with their eyes to the ground. They had become weary of looking upon a sea where no ship came, of lifting their faces to a sky that seldom changed. Summer and winter passed. Children grew into men and women. There was no more life than these things. Far away lay the other lands, dwelt in by strange people, where the life was said to be hard, and men had to fight for their existence. Sometimes an islander would sail away, shaping his course for the mainland and promising to return with news of the rest of the world. Perhaps he was drowned or picked up by some passing ship. No one could say, for he never came back. No one who left the island returned. Even the few ships that so rarely visited St. Hilda's came once only and passed not again. It was almost as if there were no such place, as if the island were a dream, a phantom creation of a sailor's brain, something rising out of the sea at midnight as a challenge to reality, and then vanishing in surf and mist, to be forgotten, to be half-consciously remembered years later, flickering for a bewildered second in a dusty brain as a dead thought. Yet, to the people of St. Hilda's, the island was reality, and the ships that came and went were their phantoms. There was only the island, because beyond it lay the ghostly, the intangible. The truth was in the seared rock, in the touch of the soil, in the sound of the waves breaking against the cliffs. This was the belief of the humble fisher folk. And they cast their nets during the day and gossiped over the harbor wall at evening, with never a thought of the lands across the sea. At dawn, the men set off to fish, and when their nets were filled, well, they would return to the island and climb the steep path that led to the fields to work with stolid patience at the soil. The group of cottages was clustered together at the water's edge, with seldom more than two rooms to contain an entire family. Now here, the women bent over their fires, cooked and darned their men's clothes, talking peacefully from dawn till dusk. One cottage stood apart from the others, built high on the cliff, and looking down upon the creek. Now today, only the site remains, and instead of a cottage stands, well, the ugly wireless station. But 60 years ago, this was the home of the chief fisherman of St. Hilda's. Here, Guthrie dwelt with his wife Jane, living as children, content in each other, unmindful of desire, ignorant of distress. Guthrie stood on the cliffs at twilight, watching the sea. Below him in the harbor, the fishing boats rocked, moored for the night. The men gossiped over the harbor wall, and the sound of their voices rose to him, mingled with the thin cries of children. The little quay was slippery with spray and blood and the scales of dead fish. The smoke curled from the chimneys, a thin blue column twisting and turning in the air. From the door of his cottage came Jane, her hands to her eyes, searching for him. "Come away down," she called. "The supper's been ready an hour since. You'll find it spoilt as likely as not." He waved his arm and turned, pausing to glance at the horizon for the last time. The sky was speckled with white, loose-flocked clouds, and the sea, changing from the oily smoothness of the day, was running past the harbor in a low swell. Already there was a wash upon the rocks at the eastward entrance. A soft humming sound came to his ears as the sea gathered force, and a cool breeze played with his hair. He ran down the hill to the village and cried to the fishermen who were standing by the wall.
"'Tis the east wind starting,"
he told them.
"Can't you see the sky? It's like a fish's tail and the big lump and sea awash on the rocks. All before midnight, now there'll be a gale to blow your heads off, and the sea, oh, angrier than the devil himself, so look to the boats."
The harbor was sheltered from the wind, yet the vessels were moored securely, fore and aft, to prevent the possibility of their breaking adrift. Well, after he had seen that everything was safe for the night, Guthrie climbed the path to his cottage on the cliff. He ate his supper in silence. He felt restless and excited. The quiet atmosphere of the cottage seemed to oppress him. He tried to occupy himself in mending a hole in one of his nets, but he could not give his mind to the task. The net slipped from his hands. He turned his head and listened. It seemed as if a cry had risen out of the night. Yet there was nothing, only that low hum of the wind, the sound of surf breaking upon the rocks. He sighed and gazed into the fire, oddly disturbed by his soul heavy within him. In the bedroom, with her head on the window, Jane knelt, listening to the sea. Her heart beat strangely, her hands trembled. She wanted to creep from the cottage and run onto the cliff where she would feel the true force of the wind. It would strike upon her breast and sweep the hair from her face. Oh, she would hear the singing of it in her ears and smell the salt tang of the spray as it stung her lips and her eyes. The longing came upon her to laugh with the wind, to cry with the sea, to open wide her arms and be possessed by something which would envelop her like a dark cloak and prevent her from straying far away on the lonely cliffs amongst the tall grass. She prayed for the day to dawn, not gently, as was its custom, but fiercely, with the sun burning the fields and the wind sweeping the white-edged seas, bringing destruction. Oh, she would stand and wait upon the shore, feeling the wet sand beneath her naked feet. A footstep sounded outside the room, and she turned with a little shiver from the window. It was Guthrie. He gazed at her solemnly and bade her shut out the sound of the wind. They undressed quietly and lay beside each other in the narrow bed without a word. He could feel the warmth of her body, but his heart was not with her. His thoughts left his form, imprisoned there at her side, and fled into the night. Oh, she felt him go, yet minded not. She put away his cold hands from her and gave herself to her own dreams, where he could have no entrance. And thus they slept together, in each other's arms, yet separately, like dead things in a grave, their souls long vanished and forgotten. When they awoke, the dawn had broken in the sky. The sun shone blindly from a blue heaven, scorching the earth. Great seas, tipped with foam, crashed against the cliff and swept the rocks outside the harbor, and all the while, the east wind blew, tossing the grass, scattering the white, hot sand, forcing its triumphant path through the white mist and the green waves like a demon let loose upon the island. Guthrie went to the window and looked out upon the day. A cry came to his lips, and he ran from the cottage, unable to believe his eyes. Jane followed him. The folk in the other cottages had risen too and stood staring at the harbor, their hands lifted in amazement, their excited voices filling the air with sound, yet fading away, indistinguishable from the wind. For there, in the harbor, dwarfing the little fishing boats with her great spars, the sails stretched upon her yards to dry in the morning sun, there lay a brig at anchor, rocking against wind and tide. Stay with me. I'll be right back. there, in the harbor, dwarfing the little fishing boats with her great spars, the sails stretched upon her yards to dry in the morning sun. There lay a brig at anchor, rocking against wind and tide. Guthrie stood on the quay amongst the crowd of fishermen. The whole of St. Hilda's was gathered there to welcome the strangers from the brig. Tall, dark men they were, these sailors from beyond the sea, with narrow eyes and white teeth that gleamed as they laughed. They spoke in a different tongue. Guthrie and his fellows questioned them, while the women and children surrounded them with gaping mouths, gazing into their faces, feeling their clothes with timid, wondering hands.
How did you find the entrance to the harbor?
Cried Guthrie.
With the wind and the sea in league together against you, why, 'tis the devil himself that have sent you here, maybe.
The sailors laughed and shook their heads. They could not understand what he said. Their eyes wandered beyond him and the fishermen to the women. They smiled and spoke amongst themselves, happy at their discovery. All the while the sun beat down upon their heads and the east wind blew, scorching the air like a breath from hell. No man went forth to fish that day. Great mountainous seas thundered past the harbor mouth, and the fishing boats remained at anchor, small and insignificant beside the strange brig. Something of madness seemed to fall upon the people of St. Hilda's. Their nets lay neglected and unmended beside their cottage doors. The fields and flowers remained untended on the hills above the village. There was no interest in their lives but the sailors from the ship. They clambered upon the brig, leaving no part of her unvisited. They touched the stranger's clothes with excited, inquisitive fingers. The sailors laughed at them. They hunted in their sea chests and gave the men cigarettes. They found bright scarves and colored kerchiefs for the women. Guthrie led them out upon the cliffs, swaggering a little like a young boy, a cigarette between his lips. The fishermen threw wide their cottage doors, jealous of one another's hospitality, each one desirous of extending the greatest welcome. The sailors soon explored the island. They thought it a poor, barren place, without interest. They descended to the shore and formed themselves into groups on the quayside, yawning, idle, hoping for a change of weather. Time hung heavily upon their hands, and still the east wind blew, scattering the sand, turning the earth to dust. The sun blazed from a cloudless sky. The big sea swept round the shores, green, foam-flecked, twisting and turning like a live thing. The sun set streaky and windswept, pointing orange fingers to the sky. The night came, warm and alive. Oh, the very air was restless. The sailors found the disused chapel at the end of the village and encamped there, fetching tobacco, and brandy from the brig. There seemed to be no order amongst them. They had no discipline. They obeyed no rules. Two men only remained on the brig to watch. The fisher folk wondered not at their conduct. Their presence on the island was so wonderful and rare a thing, nothing counted but this. They joined the sailors in the chapel. They tasted brandy for the first time. The night rang with cries and song. The island was a new place now, broken of peace, swayed by suggestion, and filled with strange desires. Guthrie stood amongst his companions, his cheeks flushed, his cold eyes bright and foolish. He held a glass in his hand. He swallowed the brandy with deep, contented draughts. He laughed with the sailors, wildly, without reason. What did it matter if he could not understand their words? The lights swayed before his eyes. The ground sloped beneath his feet. It seemed as if he had never lived before. The wind could shout, and the sea thunder and roar. The world called to him now. Beyond the island lay the other lands, the homes of these sailors. Oh, here he would find life and beauty and strange, incredible adventures. No more would he bend his back, toiling at the useless soil. The songs of the sailors rang in his ears. The tobacco smoke blinded his eyes. The brandy seemed to mix with the blood in his veins. Now the women danced with the sailors. Someone had found a concertina and a fiddle with three strings. Crazy tunes broke into the air. The women had never danced before. They were whirled from their feet, their petticoats flying out behind them. The sailors laughed and sang, beating the measure with their feet upon the floor. The fishermen lolled stupidly against the walls, drunken, happy, careless of time. A sailor came across to Jane and smiled, holding out his arms. She danced with him, flushed, excited, eager to please. Faster and faster went the music, and faster flew their feet around the room. She felt his arm tighten round her waist and was aware of the warmth of his body against hers. She could feel his breath upon her cheek. She raised her head and met his eyes. They looked into hers, seeing her naked, and he moistened his lips with his tongue. They smiled, reading each other's thoughts. An exquisite shudder, like the touch of a cool hand, ran through her. Her legs felt weak beneath her. She lowered her eyes, conscious of desire, and turned to see if Guthrie had noticed. Guilty for the first time. And the east wind blew against the church, shaking the roof, and the surf broke and thundered on the shore. The next day dawned the same, hot and relentless. The wind did not weaken in its power, nor the sea lessen in its fury. The brig still rolled at her moorings amongst the fishing boats. The fishermen leant with the sailors against the harbor wall, drinking and smoking, without thought, without energy, cursing the wind. The women idled at their cooking, neglected their mending. They stood at the doors of the cottages, new scarves round their shoulders, scarlet handkerchiefs upon their heads, impatient with the children, restless, waiting for a smile. The day passed thus, and another night, and yet another day. The sun shone, the sea shuddered and crashed, the wind blew. No one left the harbor to fish. No one worked on the land. There seemed no shade on the island. The grass lay brown and withered. The leaves hung parched and despondent from the few trees. And night fell once more, and the wind had not ceased. Guthrie sat in the cottage, his head between his hands, his brain empty. He felt ill and tired, like a very old man. Only one thing could prevent the sound of the wind from screaming in his ears and the heat of the sun from scorching his eyes. His lungs were dry, his throat ached. He staggered from the cottage and went down the hill to the church where the sailors and the fishermen lay in heaps upon the floor, the brandy running from their mouths. He flung himself amongst them and drank greedily, senselessly, giving himself to it, forgetting the wind and the sea. Jane closed the cottage door behind her and ran out onto the cliffs. The tall grass bathed her ankles and the wind leapt through her hair. It sang in her ears, a triumphant call. The sea flung itself upon the rocks below and loose flecks of foam scattered up towards her. She knew that if she waited, he would come to her from the chapel. All day his eyes had followed her as she walked amongst the sailors by the harbor wall. Nothing mattered but this. Guthrie was drunk, asleep, forgotten. But here, on the cliffs, the stars shone upon her, and the east wind blew. A dark shadow appeared from behind a clump of trees. For one moment, she was afraid. One moment only.
Who are you?
She called, but her voice fled to the wind. The sailor came towards her. He flung off her clothes with deft, accustomed fingers. She put her hands before her eyes to hide her face. He laughed and buried his lips in her hair. She stood then, with arms outstretched, waiting, naked and unashamed, like a white phantom broken and swept by the wind. Down in the chapel, the men shouted and sang. They fought amongst themselves, mad with drink. One fisherman threw a knife and pinned his brother against the wall. He writhed like a serpent, screaming with pain. Guthrie rose to his feet.
Ah, quiet, you dogs,
he shouted.
Can you not drink in peace and leave men to their dreams? Is it like this you wait for the wind to change?
Jeers and laughter drowned his voice. A man pointed a trembling finger at him.
You talk of the peace, Guthrie. You weak-limbed fool. With your wife, even now, shaming your bed with a stranger. Yeah. We'll have new blood in the island, I reckon.
A chorus of voices joined in, laughing, and they pointed at him.
Aye, Guthrie, look to your wife.
He leapt at them with a cry of rage, smashing their faces, but they were too many for him. They threw him from the chapel, flinging him onto the rough quayside. He lay, stunned, for a moment, and then shook himself like a dog and rose to his feet. So, Jane was a wanton. Jane had deceived him. He remembered his wife's body, white and slim. A haze of madness came over him, mingled with hatred and desire. He stumbled through the darkness, up the hill, to the cottage. There was no light in any of the windows. The rooms were empty.
Jane!
He called.
Jane! Where be you hiding with your damned cur lover?
No one answered. Sobbing with rage, he tore an axe from the wall. A great clumsy tool, used for chopping firewood.
Jane,
he called once more.
Come out, will ya?
His voice was powerless against the wind that shook the walls of the cottage. He crouched by the door and waited, the axe in his hands. Hours passed, and he sat in a stupor, awaiting her return. Before dawn, she came, pale and trembling like a lost thing. He heard her footfall on the path. A twig snapped under her feet. The axe uplifted.
Guthrie?
She screamed.
Oh, Guthrie! Let me alone! Let me alone!
She spread her hands in supplication, but he pushed them aside and brought the axe down upon her head. crumpling her, smashing her skull. She fell to the ground, twisted, unrecognizable, ghastly. He leant over her, peering at her body, breathing heavily. The blood ran before his eyes. He sat down by her side, his senses swimming, his mind vacant. He fell into a drunken sleep, his head pillowed on her breast. When he awoke, sober, himself again, he found her dead body at his feet. He gazed at it in horror, not understanding. The axe was still upon the floor. He lay stunned, sick, and frightened, unable to move. Then he listened as if for an accustomed sound. All was silent. Something had changed. The wind. He could no longer hear the wind. He staggered to his feet and looked out upon the island. Oh, the air was cool. Rain had fallen while he slept. From the southwest blew a cool, steady breeze. The sea was gray and calm. Far, far on the horizon lay a black dot, her white sails outlined against the sky. The brig had gone with the morning tide. Introduction information for this episode is from Short Story Review, East Wind, from JanWrites03 at WordPress.com, and other information in our show notes. Music for this episode is Minor Fable, from Luis Berra. The Drifter, from Gabriel Olofs. Ashes, from Christian Vivaldi. Gatun, Grine, and Sorely Slide, from Charlie Peach. That's Charlie Gray. And Joseph Peach. Tissue, number 7, from Philip Glass, Henri DeMarquette, and Vanessa Benelli Moselle. And Dark, from Ivory Light. Contact me. You can, right here, in comments, or at fastasleepwithGinaMarie44@gmail.com, and on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Please keep us right here for you with your wonderful reviews, likes, comments, and by subscribing. Thank you so much for listening. Keyword, monotony. Good night.